House will come to order, and the clerk will call the roll.
Barker. Barnhart. Berger. Beyer. Bonamici. Boone. Boquist. Bruin. Buckley. Burley. Butler. Cameron. Cannon. Clem. Cowan. Dallum. Dingfelder. Chris Edwards. David Edwards. Esquivel. Flores. Galizio. Garrard. Gelzer. Gilliam. Gilman. Gerard. Greenlick. Hannah. Holvey. Hunt. Jensen. Comp. Kotek. Krieger. Crummel. Lim. McPherson. Maurer. Minnis. Morgan. Nathanson. Nelson. Nolan. Olson. Reed. Richardson. Riley. Roblin. Rosenbaum. Schaffler. Scott. Shields. Greg Smith. Patty Smith. Thatcher. Tomei. Wisnet. Witt. Mr. Speaker. Excused. Burley. Greenlick. Patty Smith, excused for business of the House. Nolan.
The flag salute will be led by Representative Andy Olson.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
The opening ceremony today will be presented by Whitaker Middle School Concert Choir, directed by Erica McCauley. And the choir is a guest of Representative Kim Thatcher.
Christmas, 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 Christm
Thank you very much for that remarkable performance by Whitaker Middle School. It was a delight to have you all here. Well done. Courtesies, Representative Hunt.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. It's my pleasure to extend courtesy to the House. I would actually invite the folks to stand, the 36 student scholars from Oregon's community colleges. If you just want to stand, and as I read your name, wave your hand. We've got an amazing group here. I'd call your attention to this sheet that is on your desk, which lists out all these incredible folks from Oregon's community colleges who are the student scholars. They're getting scholarships and awards today in the governor's ceremonial office, and are really a great example of the great investment we can make and also their achievements. So raise your hand if you would as I call down your name. From Blue Mountain Community College, Brian Eddy and John Duncan. From Central Oregon, Apollo Aguirre and Heather Kuhn. From Chemeketa, Jordan Woolley and Megan Sykes. From Clackamas, Jennifer Richards and Margot Wyatt. From Clatsop, Jody Stevens and Pat Haggard. From Columbia Gorge, Jessica Herndon. From Klamath, Mark Larson and Matthew Tower. From Lane, William Johnson and Megan Werman. From Lynn Benton, Jody Lonsdale and Peggy Long. From Mount Hood, Aaron Wamble and Judy Lynn Mertz. From Oregon Coast, Elizabeth Lubinsky and Pamela Chasteen. From Portland, Deborah Porta, Lisa Marie Hummel, Nicole Hurtado and Hilda Carmen, as well as Emily Waddington Harris and Ty Bott Moraquino. From Rogue, Amy Stockting and Tanya Dungy. From Southwestern, Caitlin Nordholm and Robert Champion. From Tillamook Bay, Leah Gorsalak and Robert Cook. From Treasure Valley, Hannah Rich and Madison Montee. And finally, from Umpqua, Dusty Dowd. Congratulations to all of you.
Congratulations on your good academic work. Representative Thatcher.
Thank you. This morning's surround sound was brought to you by Kaiser's own Whitaker Concert Choir, Whitaker Middle School. These were 6th to 8th graders singing around us this morning. And just to emphasize to you the importance of the music program in the Salem Kaiser Schools, over 200 students in the school of approximately 750 participate in the choir program. The concert choir that you heard this morning recently received first place at a Heritage Music Festival in Anaheim, California. And in addition, the Whitaker Music Department received the Festival Sweepstakes Award, which is the top prize at a festival of middle school and high school music programs from around the nation. Also up in the gallery, I have visitors from Kaiser, Sarah Morrison and her mother, Sandy. Where are you? Anyway, Sarah is homeschooled and in the 7th grade. She likes hunting and birds of prey and wants to be a falconer. So give them a welcome.
Representative Holvey.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, I wish to the House to extend courtesies to a former state representative from the years 1995 to 2000 and former minority leader and current mayor of the city of Eugene, Kitty Piercy, who is in the south balcony up there. She has done an incredible job of building consensus in our community around sustainable economic development and community involvement, a great asset to Oregon. Courtesies to Kitty Piercy. Thank you.
Representative Piercy, it's great to have you with us today. Representative Crummell.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, today is Charter School Day at the Capitol, and you're all invited to come out onto the Capitol steps at noon for a charter school rally. But in the balconies around us are students and families and teachers and administrators from several charter schools around Oregon. And as I call the name of the school, if they would just stand up, that would be, if they're from that school, would just stand up. We have Lord's Charter School from SIO. We have Oregon Connections Academy from SIO. We have Sand Ridge Academy from Portland. Forest Ridge Academy from Kaiser. Mitch Academy from Tigard. Optimum Learning Center, Learning Environments Charter School from Kaiser, and others. So as you see the students and families around the Capitol today, if you would give them courtesies, that would be terrific. Also down in the Galleria, many of the schools have set up displays of their programs. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Roblin.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. It is my pleasure to introduce two of our honorary pages today from my district. First, and I'll have her stand, Chelsea Bly. Stand up, Chelsea. Chelsea is from Reedsport, 14-year-old freshman in the Oregon Connections Academy. Her activities and other things outside of school, she enjoys gardening, crocheting, jigsaw puzzles, helping her grandfather rebuild her steam engine, and science club. Her career goals as a scientist or a mechanical engineer or a veterinarian. Extend the courtesies of the House to Chelsea Bly. Second, we have Cormac Daly, the son of Kathy and Paul Daly of Reedsport, 7th grader from Reedsport Junior High School, involved in Knowledge Bowl, class representative, band, singing and dancing, and on the school bowling team. His career goals are law and politics. Again, Cormac Daly, welcome to the Capitol.
Representative Nathanson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to introduce two students joining us today as honorary pages from Eugene, both from Kelly Middle School. First, I'd like to introduce Ashley Marquardt. Ashley is involved in academics, band, jazz band, and politics, and her career goal is to be an environmental lawyer. I'd also like to introduce Zev Feinstein. Zev is involved in academics, politics, and current events, and his career goals are law and politics. Welcome to both of you. Thank you.
Further courtesies? Messages from the governor? Messages from the Senate?
Mr. Speaker, I'm directed by the President from the Senate to pass Senate Bills 135, 464, 656, 573, 835, House Bills 2080, 2580, adopted SCR 8, concurred in House Amendments, and repassed Senate Bill 2.
First reading, memorials and resolutions.
H.J.R. 56, proposing amendment to Oregon Constitution relating to governmental restriction of stripped acts. S.C.R. 8, honoring Confederated Tribes of Warm Springs, Elder Gladys Miller Thompson.
Measures read first time or pass the Speaker's desk for referral. Standing committee reports. Committee report file has been distributed. Special committee reports. Special orders of business. The clerk will read the resolution.
H.J.R. 51, recognizing contributions made to communities by persons with developmental disabilities, and recommending that savings in the governor's proposed budget be used to provide services for persons with developmental disabilities, and that any closure of Eastern Oregon Training Center be coupled with economic development plan for city.
The question now rises upon final reading and adoption of House Joint Resolution 51A. Representative Gelser.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Today I bring you House Joint Resolution 51, which comes to the floor from the House Human Services and Women's Wellness Committee with a unanimous vote from its members. This bill recognizes the challenges that we currently have in community-based supports for adults and children with developmental disabilities and the people that care for them. It also recognizes that on the horizon we have some changes in our long-term care programs for individuals with developmental disabilities. At the time this bill was drafted, the governor in his proposed budget had called for the closure of Eastern Oregon Training Center in this biennium. Since that time, he has changed that recommendation. However, he has indicated that there will eventually be a closure of the Eastern Oregon Training Center. As well, as we speak, the Oregon Department of Human Services, Seniors and People with Disabilities, is in the process of revising its rules for admission of people with developmental disabilities into nursing facilities. This is because currently some of the PASS-R screening has allowed some individuals to go into nursing facilities that could be more appropriately and more cost-effectively served in community-based savings. As a result of this, a couple of the nursing facilities that are serving the 60 children in Oregon who are growing up in nursing homes have indicated that they will likely be closing their beds during this biennium and have raised the importance of providing community-based supports to support these children once they are home in the community. Currently today in Oregon, there are over 9,000 individuals with developmental disabilities who are eligible for services but are waiting to receive them. This includes 1,200 eligible adults who are waiting to receive services that they are entitled to under the Staley settlement. Comprehensive services are also in jeopardy. We've heard from our provider wage folks, and we have people that are living at home because they cannot get into out-of-home placement spots. Less than 22% of eligible children for developmental disability services in Oregon are able to access services. As a result of this, 535 children with developmental disabilities are forced into foster care, 169 into group homes, and 59, as I mentioned earlier, are growing up in nursing facilities in Oregon. There are 2,000 children and families who are waiting for family support services, and 300 children with severe disabilities, children that use ventilators, tracheotomies, require 24-hour around-the-clock care, are currently ineligible for services because inadequate funding makes the standards so high to be able to be eligible for those services. And many of us have recently seen an article in the Statesman Journal and then yesterday in the Oregonian about one of those children whose services were threatened and the department reversed its decision on that. What this means for the families that are caring for these children are some very significant things. First of all, as children, these are parents that are not sleeping, hardly ever. They're caring for these children 24 hours a day, suctioning their airways, lifting them, carrying them, and caring for their every need. These are children who, as they grow up, when they are not able to get into services, including these 1,200 individuals who are still waiting for Staley services, their parents in the home continue to care for them. As a result, in Oregon, we have parents who literally are in their 80s and are still caring for their adult children in their 50s and their 60s. I know specifically of women over the age of 80 who are having to lift their 60-year-old sons into a bathtub, climb into the bathtub, and help to bathe them. And they have been doing this for the entire life of their children. These are very important services to fund. When we closed the Fairview Training Center, the funds that were used to support people in the Fairview Training Center were redirected and used to develop community-based supports for people with developmental disabilities, recognizing that when those institutions don't exist, the needs of the individuals there don't change. What this resolution does is say that we, as a legislature, support that same idea with the closure of Eastern Oregon Training Center, saying that although it's very expensive to serve people in institutions, when those institutions closed, we can use those dollars to serve more people appropriately in community-based settings. The same is true for the nursing facilities. For example, if we were to take the funds that were saved from serving these children in nursing homes and plow them back into a home and community-based waiver, children would be able to stay home with their families rather than instead being forced into foster care. And incidentally, the family's private insurance would help to pay for their needs at that point. This resolution was amended to recognize that the Eastern Oregon Training Center has been a significant economic driver in the Pendleton area for a very long time. And when that center closes, to move towards Oregon's standard of community-based care, which Oregon has, you know, put a stake in the ground around this, that it's important to recognize that economic impact on Pendleton. And we need to be sure that we are making good plans for the workers that would be transitioning out of those jobs and for the people of Pendleton who count on that $20 million investment in the Pendleton economy that goes to caring for those 39 individuals that are currently living in the Eastern Oregon Training Center. This is a non-binding resolution. It does not take a percentage of general fund or anything else and dedicate it to developmental disability services. It essentially says we have tremendous unmet need among our eligible populations, and as we move to greater efficiencies and better practices of serving individuals from institutions into the community, that we transfer those dollars from institutional settings into community-based savings. This is historically what we've done. It's what we've done with Fairview. It is the way that we can build and improve our community community-based services, and it will be a tremendous lifeline of encouragement to families who for decades have been caring for their loved ones with developmental disabilities. Thank you for the opportunity to talk to you about this bill, and I urge your i-vote. Thank you.
Further discussion? Representative Jensen.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, to the bill.
To the resolution, or did you have a question?
To the resolution. Thank you for the correction. Colleagues, first I'd like to thank Representative Gelser for having talked to me about this bill before it came out of committee and explaining a little bit of you know what it was. And I also like to thank her because this gives me something of a forum then to get up and make some comments in relationship to not only the facility in Pendleton but to the basically population that I think the representative is so deeply concerned with, and that I genuinely appreciate her concern with the care of these people who are less fortunate in some ways than some of us through no cause of their own or no act of their own. First, I question the bill because, as a representative, the carrier has indicated it's a permissive bill and doesn't really require that this course of action that is proposed be followed. So that would give me some pause as to how I would vote on the issue. Secondly, I have obviously concerns, as the good representative has indicated, about the facility that is located in Pendleton. The facility that has been serving in a community that has been serving the developmentally disabled as well as the mentally ill now for near on to a century. I think coming up on about 2 years or something of that nature before we get to the century mark. I hate to have a bill or a resolution here that in some way or another is attempting to legitimate the or could be interpreted to be legitimating the planning for the closure of Eastern Oregon Training Center in Pendleton. Now, I do this with, you know, some very, very specific reason. First of all, this is really the only facility of this type to deal with this particular population that we have in the state of Oregon at this time. Compliments of the closure of Fairview and other facilities that we've had around the state. There is no 24/7 facility where there is the medical attention and all of the other care that some of this population needs. And I would not in any way stand up before this body and make any effort as far as Eastern Oregon Training Center is concerned if I did not think it was an exemplary facility and that the services provided were the very best of services for this population. In fact, confirmation of my belief on what they do at Eastern Oregon Training Center has recently come out when the federal, the HCFA reviews took place there, and a federal reviewer was there and said that this particular operation ranks in the top 10% in America. When I consider that we have had in this whole arena of mental health, developmentally disabled operations, some really tragic operations that were indefensible by anybody's standards, and then to see us, taking one that is in the top 10% as far as the federal government is concerned, and proposing somewhere down the line to close this causes me to have a great deal of heartburn. Now, I know there are those who strongly believe that all of these people should be in the home, or all of these people should be in cottage or group home types of things. First, as far as the group home concept is concerned, if you go there, you would in fact find that this operation is modeled after group home types of operations. So, you know, in this respect, it's similar to what many of the
Representative Flores yields.
Thank you, Representative. Similar to what many of the folks would be proposing for all of this population. The or not all, but those are the population that were unable to stay in the home. And the good representative has indicated that many of the people are no longer in a situation where they may have a home to stay in because of aging parents. And such is the case where with some of the folks at Eastern Oregon Training Center, who one case in particular that I'm familiar with, the parents were from Athena, Oregon originally, and I guess are still at Athena since they died a number of years ago. So there is no home, you know, available. And for this population, this will always be something of the case, where there will not be some time in their life, may not be, not will not, but may not be a home for them to go to. You know, to talk about closing a facility then that provides excellent service for the population when homes may at some time in some folks' lives may not be an option simply because no parents are there to provide that. The other group that are of concern, I think, for the good representative carrying the resolution are those who keep their or want to keep their children in their home. And I will be the first one to admit, and I will be the first one to chastise this body and this state and this government for the inadequate care inadequate support that we provide to parents for keeping their children at home, where in essence the state has made them an offer. You know, either take vows of poverty and put your whole life into working to keep these children at home, or send them off to an institution or a group home where then the state will take the responsibility for it. But many of these folks don't want to do that. They want to have their children at home. They want to raise them at home. They want to provide for them. But the financial cost, and I have a number of personal friends who fall into this category, one very good friend who falls into this category that has raised her child from infancy, from birth, to now she's facing the trauma that the boy is 18 years old and special other types of considerations must be made. Yes, we need to put more money and more resources into these situations. We need to respect the parents of these children. We need to respect the people, the children, and then later adults themselves. But to look at closing somewhere now, hopefully down the line, the one place in the state of Oregon that is nationally recognized and accepted seems to me to be a very, very poor policy route to start down the path on. And I, again, in closing, and thank you for your indulgence in listening to me on this. I don't want to speak specifically against the resolution, except I think it's premature. part of the discussion that needs to take place over the course of the next 4 or 5 years is the discussion about whether or not we need a long-term facility. And if we do need this type of facility, small though it may be, then why not keep the one that is good rather than close it down and have to start up another one at some other particular place? I'd like to talk longer, but I'm running out of things to say, and my capable staff is sitting here pointing at my chair. So thank you very much, members. We appreciate your patience and appreciate your consideration of this issue. And I do hold up this population to you as a challenge.
Representative
to
Dahlum,
do more
yields.
For. We need to be more devoted to this particular group of people. I beg you, I challenge you to do that.
Further discussion, Representative Kotek.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the resolution.
To the resolution.
Colleagues, I rise today in support of HR 51A, and for a very simple reason. I think this bill makes a value statement about reinvesting in an underfunded system. If and when we are to close the Eastern Oregon Training Center, and as we've heard from the good representative from District 58, land of the loaves and fishes, I look forward in the next couple years to having that robust discussion about whether or not what we should do with that facility. In the meantime, however, this is a very simple resolution in the sense that we know that services to people, adults and children with developmental disabilities is underfunded. If we are going to encourage our agencies to look at different ways of delivering service as the times change, one way to do that is to say that we will reinvest those dollars, like we did with Fairview, into the services for the individuals who need it. And that's why I'm supporting this bill today, this resolution today, and I hope you will too. Thank you.
Representative Crummell.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the resolution.
To the resolution.
Colleagues, I'm speaking on this resolution with kind of an interesting perspective. When I was in college, one of the many jobs that I had was being an orderly in a nursing home. And you say an orderly? Well, that's today's nurse's assistant is yesterday's orderly. That's what we called them back then. And part of the population that we had in the wing, in one wing of the of that nursing home, were developmentally disabled people. Some of them were catatonic, never moved out of bed. Others were ambulatory, but boy, did we have to watch them, because they could wander off and get lost in the community, and there was, and it was dangerous. And actually, this nursing home was sort of out in the country, so it was, it had a lot of orchard around it, but that also meant there were wildlife around it. And when I say wildlife, I mean like bears, cat, big cats, as well as people that may not recognize and be willing to cut these people some slack. I also, my daughter has a half-sister who, by the way, just a year ago graduated from Putnam High School. There is no reason on God's green earth why that little girl survived 18 years ago, but she did because of medical science. And she's at the other end of the spectrum. She's ambulatory. There are a lot of things that she can do. As a matter of fact, she did a fundraiser at Putnam to get disabled doors installed in the school so that kids like her could punch a button and the door would open. And she got the doors donated and money donated, and now Putnam High School has disabled doors because of her. So she's at the, while she's developmentally disabled, she's at the other end of the spectrum from what I was just talking about with the kids that I took care of in the nursing home. The thing that we have to recognize is, was alluded to by the representative from Pendleton, is that some people will not do well in a home setting. Some people will not do well in a community setting. They really need the care, the full-time care that it takes in a facility such as the Eastern Oregon Training Center. I think there are some questions here that really need to be asked, and rather than put the representative from Corvallis on the spot and ask her to start firing questions this morning, I decided to just ask the questions as part of my comments. I think, number one, when people decide to keep their children at home, and I applaud them, and in 1999 I fought for $5 million in the budget to give them respite care so that there would be somebody that they could call that could come in and take care of their children for them for an evening or an overnight or a weekend or maybe a week so that they could get some time to themselves. But one of the questions that comes up then with this is, will there be money for respite care for families? What kind of savings, if we were to close the Eastern Oregon Training Center, what kind of savings do we anticipate that we're actually going to get? What happens with the situation where a family is flat out unable to care for children? Where will they go if they are a child or a person that is completely developmentally disabled and cannot be in a home, a group home or a community home type of situation? And does closure of the Eastern Oregon Training Center mean that we do like we did in mental health? I went through this in the early 90s with the closure of Damish. I was the mayor of Wilsonville. And while we were able to recover from a standpoint of the jobs that would go away, the bottom line was DHS ended up going into downtown Portland and they rented an old hospital that had been left, Holiday Park Hospital. It's an 8-story structure. And they rented that out, and that's where they moved the people from. That's where they moved the people from Damish that couldn't be placed.
Representative Butler yields.
Thank you, Representative. The people that couldn't be placed in community-type homes that were mentally ill. So what we did was we traded one facility that we owned for another facility in a high-rent district that we now rent. That, to me, made no sense at all. And I see the same thing happening with the situation that we have with the Eastern Oregon Training Center. We close it, and then we end up renting space somewhere else to take care of these people. I have a lot of care for the folks that are developmentally disabled. They need our help. And, you know, some people say, well, you know, you're a hard-hearted Republican, so, you know, just let them take care of themselves. But you know what? That's not the case. These families that are, through no fault of their own, in a situation where they have a developmentally disabled child that will be developmentally disabled for their lifetime, these families need some help, and they need a place that they can have their children go if they ever are in a situation where they're not going to be able to take care of themselves and the child would not survive or not do well in a community home type of situation. I think that House Joint Resolution 51 is basically saying, you know, we ought to close this down and everybody can fit into the same mold of community housing. I also disagree that not everybody should be in an institution. But I think that what we will end up doing is trading one thing for another. And so I'm going to vote no. And it's not because I don't care about the developmentally disabled. I care for them very much. But it's a situation that, just like everyone shouldn't be in an institution, not everyone is going to thrive and do well in a community housing type of situation. And an institution may be the best place for them to be. and we need to keep at least one open in this state. And so for that reason, I don't even want to contemplate the notion of closing the Eastern Oregon Training Center, so I will vote no on this and invite you to do the same. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Further discussion, Representative Roblin.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Question of the carrier.
Question of the carrier. Will the carrier yield?
Yes.
She does.
I guess what I want to clearly understand is what kind of savings would there be if we had the Eastern Oregon Training Center closed, and what could they be used for?
Thank you for that question, Representative. Currently, the cost at EOTC is approximately $24,000 per month, or $288,000 per person per year. If we look at the children who are growing up in nursing homes or adults, the cost would be about $3,000 per month to support them at home with 24-hour nursing care and community-based supports. So it would follow that if and when the Eastern Oregon Training Center does close, we would be able to serve far more people in the community just as a result of the cost of care currently at the Eastern Oregon Training Center.
Thank you.
Representative Gerard.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the resolution.
Thank you. Colleagues, I'm going to support this, but I agree with it that there has to be a caveat put in there. Along with my resume of doing a lot of different things, I actually did a residency in Fairview for dentistry. And to this day, I remember very avidly looking at an x-ray of a GI tract and seeing a zipper in the GI tract. And they asked me, well, what is this? And I said, somebody ate a zipper. No, they ate the whole lab coat. And so there are people that you do not see out in the public that are very, very severely disabled that cannot function at home. Other examples, they wanted to be nice to an individual and put her outside for a while. She, too, has an eating disorder and proceeded to eat rocks. And so they had to have the stomach pump. The biggest disaster nutrition-wise at Fairview for decades was somebody gave prunes with pits, and they all ate the pits. So there are those that are very, very extremely disabled that just would not function well out with the rest of the public. The vast majority do. And that is why I'm supporting this resolution. And I think the heart's in the right place, and I don't have a problem with voting yes.
Further discussion? Representative Jensen, you are allowed to speak a second time since no one else is in the queue. You're not allowed to ask questions upon a second time.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the resolution.
To the resolution.
And no questions, but a response to a question that was asked. The question that was asked was the difference of cost between being at Eastern Oregon Training Center and the difference of cost versus being in some type of a group home setting. And I think, as you heard the answer, and it was correct. I'm not quarreling, you know, with that. But first off, this is one of the issues that I was making. If you want to get off for cheap, okay, if that's what you want to do, get off for cheap. Remember, you get what you pay for. Most of these group homes, if not all, are operating with minimum wage jobs. That's how you get it down to cheap. Minimum wage jobs leave very little expertise in the area. These people need a lot of expertise. One of the other costs that factors in costs, and one of the things that James Taze, the person who has led much of this movement for a long time in Oregon, made was that you need something like Eastern Oregon Training Center for those individuals who may be violent. Now, he also followed up, there doesn't appear to be any violence on the part of the people who are at Eastern Oregon Training Center. Now, part of the reason for that is the psychiatric 24/7 care that's available, the 24/7 monitoring of the medications that they would have to take, or that they should take, to deal with that violence, plus the 24/7 professional staff that you have. Go to your group homes and look at the turnover rate. Turnover rate is astronomical. That's what you get for cheap. If that's the way we want to treat our unfortunate, then, colleagues, I apologize. I think they deserve better than this. And I'm asking you as a body to not just look at continuation of the facility at Eastern Oregon Training Center at some time out into the future, but also to look at getting the funding up in these group homes so that we can attract quality staff so they get the kind of professional care and help that they need to have. Some of that doesn't have to be expensive, but some of it is. Psychiatrists aren't cheap. And sometimes there is a desperate need for that psychiatric supervision. Psychiatric nurses aren't cheap. And sometimes there is a need for that. And when you don't have it, who suffers? Not the people who are working in the home suffer. Not those of us out here suffer. The people who suffer are the children, the young people, and even the older people when that happens. Thank you, colleagues.
Further discussion, Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, to the bill.
To the resolution.
To the resolution. Colleagues, I rise in support of House Joint Resolution 5-1 amended because people with developmental disabilities do not belong in institutions. They have a right to live in the community of their choice. In fact, they have lived in the community successfully for decades. Many people see those with developmental disabilities as people who need constant care. Contrary to that, in the majority of the situations, they truly need freedom, a right, to be the best that they can be. Expectations need to be set that always keep them reaching and stretching. About 20 years ago, I was involved in a study on autism for some people from Hong Kong. I was astounded to find that autism after the age of 18 is not considered a medical problem, and that individuals with autism are not covered by insurance, or were not covered at that time by insurance. Therefore, our practice, which was despicable, unbelievable when I found it, to put these people with autism in what we called back then old folks' homes, where most of them were strapped down on for a large portion of every day because no one focused on their particular need. The same thing has happened in many cases with individuals with developmental disabilities. That $288,000 could be used for the almost 4,000 individuals with developmental disabilities who receive no support. Let's keep these individuals in a home where they feel secure and a part of the communities they truly love.
Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Gelser, do you wish to close?
Yes, Mr. Speaker, thank you. And I wanted to thank you, colleagues, for a very interesting and heartfelt debate. I think that these are issues that many of us hold very close to our hearts, and they are certainly very difficult things to work through as we consider how to best support the needs of our most vulnerable citizens in the community. I hadn't intended the bill to lead to a conversation about the eventual closure of Eastern Oregon Training Center, and in fact, the bill itself does not mandate the closure of Eastern Oregon Training Center. It talks about the proposed future closure of the center and talks about any savings that are garnered from that should stay in the system. However, we've heard from some who oppose the closure of the Eastern Oregon Training Center, and I wanted to be sure that you were aware of some of those that do support closure of the training center in support of people with developmental disabilities in the community. And those include people like the Arc of Umatilla County, the Oregon Advocacy Center, United Cerebral Palsy, the Oregon Council on Developmental Disabilities, the Arc of Oregon, O4AD, the Human Services Coalition of Oregon, and self-advocates as leaders, and a whole list of other people. The people that that advocate as professionals, the family members, for a large part, the majority of them strongly urge the support of people with developmental disabilities in the communities. If those aren't in their own family homes because their families aren't able or willing to provide those supports, those are in independent living centers, in group homes, and in foster care and other types of settings. I think that the good representative from Pendleton raised some very important points about the quality and the ability of our current community-based supports to support these individuals that currently are receiving services and the 9,000 who are currently waiting to receive them. And that, colleagues, really is part of the point of this bill. If our facilities were to stop serving individuals, either because Eastern Oregon Training Center were to close through a separate action or because nursing home beds were to close, it is absolutely critical, and that's what this bill says, that those dollars be plowed back into community-based supports for people. This goes to the good representative from Wilsonville's question as well. Will there be dollars available for respite care? That's what this resolution says. It's essentially a stake in the ground moving forward to say, should the Eastern Oregon Training Center close, should these nursing facility beds close, we need to continue to provide those supports and make available community supports to support both those who are leaving those facilities and those in the communities that are still waiting for services. Some good points have been made about turnover in our comprehensive services programs, about 75%. Those workers have been waiting for raises for a very long time. And again, I have to ask myself, how is it that we're currently spending our dollars in this system, and are we making the best use of them for the largest number of people? Again, in this institutional model, we're spending over $20 million per biennium for 39 individuals compared to the 9,000 that are waiting. In terms of children, we're spending $13 million per biennium for 60 children compared to the thousands that are waiting for services. And I think that that's a question that can be asked in the Ways and Means process. What is the best use of limited dollars to serve the greatest number of people with disabilities in the best way that we can? It is not my intention to come to you today and ask for you to support a resolution or to do things on the cheap for people with disabilities. Many of you know painfully how passionate I am about these issues. One of the reasons that I'm involved in public life is related to my passion for people with developmental disabilities and my commitment to raising those small voices so that we can all hear them. This is a population that we don't often hear from. They're not a very powerful population, and they need us to stand up and say, we aren't going to further reduce their services, and if we have savings in a program, we're going to move them forward. This isn't about doing things on the cheap. It's about serving the largest number of people. It's about quality community-based settings. It's about honoring families, the families who have children that they want to live at home. It's about the family that's living in Bend that has to drive 3.5 hours once a week in order to see their child that's living in a nursing facility because they were eligible for absolutely no help whatsoever in their community in Bend. It's about that 80-year-old woman who's still lifting her son into the bathroom, into the bathtub after all of these years of absolutely no help and support. What this resolution says is that we're committed to continuing to spend the dollars that we currently spend on developmental disability services on developmental disability services. And if and when we become more efficient in those services, if we move to a community-based model, that rather than plugging those savings into other programs, we are plugging those in to expanding services and providing safe services for those that move out of this. Colleagues, I ask your support of this measure. It's true that it's not binding, but what this will offer is an arm outstretched, offering hope to these families who are wanting to bring their children home, to individuals with disabilities who want to live in the community. It's a statement of value, and I hope that you will join me in voting yes. Thank you.
Those who are of the opinion that the resolution should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. And the clerk will open the voting system. Representative McPherson, how do you vote? McPherson votes no. Representative Shields, how do you vote? Shields votes aye. Representative Minnis, how do you vote? Minnis votes no. Representative Schaffler votes no. Representative Nathanson votes aye. And Representative Greenlick votes aye. House Joint Resolution 51A, having received a constitutional majority, is declared passed. Propositions and motions. Representative Richardson.
Mr. Speaker, I move House Bill 3535 be withdrawn from the Committee on Revenue.
Representative Richardson moves that House Bill 3535 be withdrawn from the Committee on Revenue. Mason, Section 491, Paragraph 4, states it is not in order to discuss the merits of a bill upon a motion to withdraw the bill from committee. Debate in such cases must be confined strictly to the purpose of the motion, for if this were not true, the merits of any question could be forced under discussion merely by such a motion to withdraw. To your motion.
Mr. Speaker, House Bill 3535 creates the Oregon State Police Patrol Division Fund. It would be established under the Treasury and would fund it with 1% of the general fund. It needs to come to the floor today because today is the 106th day of this legislative session. The legislature is on a very tight timeline. Last Friday, April 20th, all committee chairs must have requested their fiscal and revenue impact statements. This week, certain bills must have completed their first work session. April 30th is the final day for many House bills to be passed out of committee. Now, although Revenue Committee has some flexibility regarding these deadlines, Ways and Means cannot do their job if they don't know whether or not 1% of the general fund is going to be allocated specifically and dedicated to the Oregon State Police Highway Troopers. It's not fair to Ways and Means to delay the dedication of 1% of general fund revenues. It's not fair to Oregonians who deserve and demand 24/7 highway protection to delay the dedication of 1% of general fund revenues to the Oregon State Police Patrol Division. We need to bring this bill to the floor today. House Bill 3535 is only 10 lines long. It's a simple bill. It's a rational bill. It's a bill that needs to be brought to the House floor without further delay.
My advice is a little late in coming, but it's been pointed out that you only get to present what is in the bill, not to advocate for the contents of the bill or against the contents, but only to why it should be on the floor today. Further discussion, please keep this in mind. Representative Esquivel.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the motion.
To the motion.
Colleagues, I've never spoken in front of you about bringing anything to this floor. Not once. But today's going to be an exception. Why? Why should we bring this? Let me give you some background, just in Southern Oregon. One time in Josephine County, 1976, we had 35 troopers. In Jackson County, we had 40. Today, we have 8 and 11, respectively, with a 40% growth in population. We've all talked in the past, I know I have, in Southern Oregon, we talked about it a lot, about funding, adequate funding for the state troopers. In 1976, we had 600 and some troopers. Today, we have about 263. That's not adequate funding. We have a time frame here. This isn't a Republican issue. It's not a Democrat issue. Colleagues, this is an Oregon issue. This is the backbone of the state of Oregon law enforcement and public safety. We need to think about things when we bring this to the floor. Why we need to bring it to the floor, I'll tell you why. ONC revenues will stop. They will cease. We need to backfill that with state troopers and adequate funding for them. Again, this bill, 3535, is a bipartisan bill. We have great support throughout this whole House, colleagues. So therefore, it's very imperative that we bring this forth, we discuss it, we pass it, and we support the organization. Thank you.
Further discussion, Representative Olson.
Mr. Speaker, to the motion.
To the motion.
Colleagues, Mr. Speaker, House Bill 3535 is a pretty simple bill. It creates the Oregon State Police Patrol Division Fund, and it dedicates 1% of the general fund revenue to the Oregon State Police Patrol Division. Basically, what are we after? Well, we're wanting to restore, 140 troopers on the road to ensure that we have 24-hour coverage on the main arterial highways throughout the state and provide an opportunity for future growth for the agency.
Representative Olson, I need to remind you, you cannot speak to the merits of the bill.
Okay. I became a member of the state police in 1974. I remember in 1980 when we were removed from the Highway Trust Fund. From that point forward, I have only seen one other time the members of the Oregon Legislature treat the Oregon State Police as a priority. In 1999, the legislature authorized the department to hire 100 troopers in two phases, but that was short-lived. After having implemented phase one, hiring 25 candidates, the governor at that time stepped in using the remaining dollars for another priority. The department was never able to complete phase two, hiring the balance of the 100 troopers. So once again, I felt that we were not a priority. Would you think public safety not a priority? So here we are today, April 23rd, 2007, still no dedicated funding and still no budget. I would venture to say that most of us campaigned last year ensuring increase of the troopers on the road, making the state police a priority. And it is true that there has been much discussion throughout the Capitol session about the state police this year. But this bill right here has a total of 42 members from this House that have signed on in support of it. Let's talk about some facts.
President Olson, please make each comment in the context of why it needs to come to the floor today.
Yes, sir. Okay, you might have to give me a red light here again then on some of this stuff. All right, let's talk some facts, okay? The patrol division receives less than 1% of general fund budget. From a trooper's perspective, the governor's recommended budget isn't serious about increasing the ranks, when it eliminates 46 positions, but replaces them with an auto insurance surcharge that doesn't have a chance. And then the co-chair's budget is interesting to say the least. It adds 100 positions total, but not to patrol, 15 to criminal division as well. So I want to close with this.
Representative, you're still speaking to the merits of the bill, which are outside of the rules for a motion to withdraw.
Okay, so I owe you how many push-ups, Mr. Speaker?
Preferably just keep the balance of your remarks to why it needs to come today.
Yes, sir.
Thank you.
Okay. Hey, colleagues, this is a really tough one for me because I'll just flat tell you. You know, 29 years with the agency, and to have seen what has happened to the Oregon State Police, and I know all of you feel the same way to see this here, and that's why we're here today. And that's all been a huge priority for us. But this, you know, we need your support. We need to get something moving. We need to clearly say you are a priority to us, the men in blue, the women in blue. There are four things that I know I do not know about this bill. Now, I hope that this stays within the...
Your comments need to be addressed to the question of why it has to come out of committee today.
Okay. Okay, well, I will close then. It's time to make the Oregon State Police a priority and actually quit playing political football with them. Thank you.
Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Richardson, do you wish to close on your motion?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Just a moment. Representative Minnis, did you wish to rise to discuss this issue?
Yes, Mr. Speaker, I did.
To the motion?
To the motion. Ladies and gentlemen, we have been talking about funding state police in this building for 20 years. 20 years. 20 years that I've been in this building, every governor has cut the state police in their budget. The reason this budget needs to come forward today is because the co-chair's budget's about to be completed. We need to make sure that our state police are at the top of the list. If our communities are not safe, if our schools aren't safe, if we're not safe in our homes, what is the point of all the other things that we offer the citizens of Oregon? It's time to make a decision to make this budget in this agency a priority. And Mr. Speaker and members of this august body, not just give it lip service. During the interim, we added back 20 positions. And I got to tell you, when I saw the governor's budget that cut not just the 20, but the 49 and said, go get your funding somewhere else, men and women who lay down your lives every day to go out and protect us, I was profoundly disappointed. We understand what's going to happen here. We understand there's going to be a juxtaposition between this budget and other public safety budgets and increased revenue. We understand that that's the game. Well, ladies and gentlemen, I think that men and women who go out to defend us on a daily basis and lay their lives on the line to keep us safe. I married a police officer. I sent him out the door for 27 years. And I know I'm pushing it, Mr. Speaker, and I'll reel it back in. I understand what I'm doing. But I think they deserve the respect of this body to be told that they're going to get their funding because they keep us safe. The time is now, Mr. Speaker. With all due respect, the time is now to put this bill on the floor. It has broad bipartisan support. And I would ask that this body join us in funding the state police and to dedicate that funding so they can go out and do their job rather than wandering from biennium to biennium. They're going to have equipment, they're going to have backup, and they're going to have sufficient resources to do the very hard job we ask them to do. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Further discussion of the motion?
Okay. Now, Representative Richardson, would you like to close?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Today is the 106th day of this session. We must not delay any longer bringing forward the bill that will fund state police for 24/7 coverage. It's a simple bill. It's a simple subject. Ways and Means needs to know that there's 1% of the general fund revenue that will be dedicated to the troopers for our state police so that they can prepare their budgets and we can get out of here with a sine die adjournment on June 29th. Colleagues, let's pass this motion, bring this bill to the floor today so that our state police can be funded and so that Ways and Means will know where that funding is going to be coming from. Thank you.
Those who are of the opinion that the motion should be adopted will vote aye. Those opposed, no. And the clerk will open the voting system. Representative Edwards, David Edwards, how do you vote?
Aye.
He votes aye. Representative Berger, how do you vote? Representative Berger is off the floor. The motion to withdraw the measure from committee on revenue, having received the required majority, is declared adopted. I order House Bill 3535 to second reading. To second and third reading. Second reading will occur tomorrow, and third reading will occur on Wednesday. Further propositions and motions. Representative Bruin, did you wish to rise? No. Okay. His group has left. First reading of House Bills.
House Bill 3547 related to elections, declaring an emergency. House Bill 3540 related to property tax exemption for food processor and prescribing effective date. House Bill 3549 related to property line adjustments.
Bills read first time or passed the Speaker's desk for referral. Second reading of House Bills.
House Bill 2636 relating to government ethics. House Bill 2687 relating to persons subject to regulation by Oregon Board of Licensed Professional Counselors and Therapists. House Bill 2892 relating to union organizing and declaring an emergency. House Bill 2937 relating to hepatitis C. House Bill 3103 relating to public disclosure of rate filing information. House Bill 3104 relating to urban renewal agencies. House Bill 3291 relating to taxation of districts by cities. House Bill 3360 relating to tankless water heaters. House Bill 3484 relating to life insurance and declaring an emergency.
Bills read second time or passed the third reading. Consent calendar. Chair requests unanimous consent that the rules be suspended and House Bill 3482 be carried over to its proper place on the Tuesday, April 24th, 2007 consent calendar. Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Third reading of House bills. House will stand at ease. Third reading of House bills. Clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 2104, relating to reporting requirements for certain unclaimed property.
The question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2104A. Representative Berger.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and thank you for the indulgence of the House for that pause. House Bill 2104 reduces the dormancy period for certain types of unclaimed property and changes the method of mailing notice for impending service changes. As an overview, let me talk about the issue. Unclaimed property is generally intangible property ranging from uncashed checks to savings accounts to stocks or utility refunds. The funds are remitted to the state when the owner of the property cannot be located or contacted for a certain period of time. Dormancy periods are based on the type of entity holding the property and the type of property. Under Oregon's current law, there are three types of entities and six types of dormancy. Six different dormancy periods. All 50 states have unclaimed property laws, and no two are alike. In response to the holders or the businesses, the states are attempting to create a more uniformity in reporting requirements. The reporting entities affected by the proposed changes in this bill are financial institutions, insurance companies, and securities industries. Most of these entities report to multiple states and comply with a wide variety of jurisdictional requirements. Businesses that assess service charges related to unclaimed property currently must provide notice of the impending charge by certified mail. That's background. This bill will reduce one of the dormancy periods, thereby decreasing the number of dormancy periods the affected entities have to manage. It will align Oregon with over 30 other states that have similarly lowered the dormancy period for the same type of property. It further provides consistency for the businesses that hold and report the affected property. It will reduce the amount of time the business will be liable for protecting the property. It is likely that it will also increase the business's rate of success in locating owners because the required search effort will be initiated. This bill basically reduces the dormancy period for financial institutions, insurance companies, insurance industries from 5 years to 3 years. It provides a benefit to the businesses while maintaining the intent of purposes of unclaimed property laws. It has the support of the industries that are affected on both the local and national level. I would welcome any questions and urge an aye vote.
Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Berger, do you wish to close?
No, thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Those are opinion the bill should pass, vote aye. Those opposed, no. And the clerk will open the voting system. Representative Lim votes aye. Representative Gilliam votes aye. Representative Richardson votes aye. Representative Minnis. Representative Minnis. Representative Minnis is off the floor. House Bill 2104A, having received a constitutional majority, is declared passed. Clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 2125, relating to changes in the state child support program in response to changes in federal law and declaring an emergency.
The question now arises on third reading and final passage of House Bill 2125A. Representative McPherson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move that House Bill 2125A be referred to the Special Committee on Ways and Means.
Representative McPherson moves that House Bill 2125A be referred to the Special Committee on Ways and Means. To your motion.
Mr. Speaker, this bill is the regular bill that comes forward in a different iteration each session on child support brought forward by the Department of Justice, and it did not have a referral to Ways and Means placed on it initially, but it has been determined there is a fiscal impact such that it needs to go through that process. So it would be appropriate for us to attach that referral now.
Further discussion of the motion? Seeing none, Representative McPherson, do you wish to close? Those of the opinion that House Bill 2125A should be referred to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means will say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The motion, having received the required majority, is declared adopted. House Bill 2125A is referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. Clerk, will read the next bill.
House Bill 2472, relating to commuter rail.
Question now arises on third reading and final passage of House Bill 2472A. Representative Greenlick. Chair requests unanimous consent that House Bill 2472A be carried over to its proper place on the Tuesday calendar. Is there any objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Clerk, read the next bill.
House Bill 2570, related to medical devices.
Question now arises on third reading and final passage of House Bill 2517A. Representative Cannon.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, this is a good bill, and to illustrate that, I want to tell you a story about a boy named Matthew who at age 10 was struck by a drunk driver. He spent 3 months in the hospital and underwent 35 surgeries, including the amputation of his right leg. Matthew obtained a prosthesis and learned to walk again, and within a year he was back to playing basketball, football, and riding a bike. As he grew, Matthew's prosthetic leg needed to grow too, and he was constantly getting upgrades and new parts. What Matthew didn't realize during that time is that his father had remortgaged the house and cashed out his family's 401k to pay for the leg, despite having health insurance. Today, Dr. Matthew Bradley is an orthopedic surgery resident in Portland, where he conducts amputations, among other operations. He is also the brains and the heart and the will behind House Bill 2517, which will help fulfill his commitment to helping people who find themselves in the same position he found himself in as a child. House Bill 2517 requires Oregon insurers to provide coverage for medically necessary health care services related to prosthetic and orthotic devices. The intent of this bill is to provide orthotic and prosthetic coverage to patients in order to help them achieve a level of activity such that they can complete the activities of daily living and use and work necessary to do their job. This bill was unopposed by Oregon's insurance companies. It passed unanimously out of the Health Care Committee, and I urge your aye vote.
Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Cannon, do you wish to close?
No, thank you.
Those are the opinion that House Bill 2517A should pass. We'll vote aye. Those opposed, no. And the clerk will open the voting system. Representative Gelser, how do you vote? Representative Gelser votes aye. Representative Jensen votes aye. Representative Butler votes aye. And Representative Thatcher votes aye. House Bill 2517A, having received a constitutional majority, is declared passed. Clerk, read the next bill.
House Bill 3164, related to hunting on public lands.
Question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 3164, Representative Clem.
We got problems here. There we go. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. House Bill 3164 comes to you out of your Committee on Agriculture and Natural Resources. It's a good bill. I think I might actually try, since Representative Cannon's last speech went so well, I'm going to emulate it. There is a story of a little hunter named Brian, and he used to like to go hunting with his dad a lot outside of the Coos Bay area. And over time, he went to college and tried to go hunting outside of the Corvallis area, except that it's really hard to find anywhere to hunt. And everybody who hunted all ended up having to go to sort of the same area because there was very limited access to lands. And it's for a variety of reasons, private landowners closing off their access. And it's one of the main things that little Brian and all the other hunters in Oregon have a problem with, is they can't find a lot of accessible lands to hunt on, and it's shrinking and shrinking and shrinking. This bill fixes that problem, at least as it relates to public lands. We had a bill earlier in the session that actually changed some of the liability rules around private landowners who were entering into habitat access program agreements, because we had found that 6,600 acres just in the last 2 years were removed from access to hunting for fear of people getting sued for participating in these habitat access programs. And we passed that bill out of this house to try and fix hunting access in that regard. This bill says that the Department of Fish and Wildlife should not take actions that result in a loss of hunting lands, and to the extent practicable. And the way they do that is by finding another area that would be accessible to hunting if they, for whatever reasons they see fit, need to take something out of accessibility to hunting lands. The hunters of this state contribute greatly, actually, to our wildlife management population. Not only do they do it really for us at for free, they pay hunting tags in order to manage the game of the state and provide food for themselves and their families. Obviously, there was, as you'll see, 2 no votes in the committee, and so it's not a unanimous bill. I wish you could report it was. I worked hard on that. I was not able to achieve that. But I would urge you to consider hunters and their ability to also use the public forest the way that others who don't hunt like to use it, and their ability to go out and provide some food for themselves and their families. I guess with that, that's all I really got, Mr. Speaker.
Further discussion, Representative Butler.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Question of the carrier.
Question of the carrier. Does the carrier yield?
I do.
He does.
Representative, you and I had spoken earlier with regard to some concerns about Division of State Lands properties and allowing access to those Division of State Lands properties where the current leases or the future leases would not allow hunting on those particular parcels as a result of whatever reason relative to the lease. Would the department then, the Department of Fish and Wildlife then, would go out, if there's a 40-acre loss as a result of the fact that we've got an intensively row-cropped area, would the department then go out and substitute and find other land? Is that what would happen under this reasonably suitable property?
Right. Thank you, Representative. Yes, the department would be asked under this bill to the greatest extent practicable to avoid making a management determination the result in net loss. So they would go out and look, and they're not even bound to actually find it. We're just saying go out and try and find it if something needs to be taken out to protect food security under a federal law.
Thank you to the bill.
To the bill.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Representative. I'm pleased to be able to vote yes for this bill. The concern that I have expressed to the carrier of the bill is one of the Federal Food Safety Act following 9/11, where there are in fact state lands that are leased for high intensity food production in eastern Oregon and throughout the state of Oregon, just because those lands may be are in fact public lands, and just because they should and could be hunted when they are not being intensively farmed. My hope is that we will respect the rights of farmers and ranchers, particularly the farmers that are farming intensively farmed lands with high intensity, high value crops on them, where under the Federal Food Safety Act post 9/11, that if those food crops are going to go into the food commodity markets, that we honor their obligations to keep hunters and fishermen perhaps off those cropped lands until such time as the crop is actually harvested. Thank you very much.
Further discussion, Representative McPherson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, to the bill.
To the bill.
It's been suggested that I should explain the no vote that I cast on this bill in committee. And colleagues, I'd have to say it's not an extremely important issue that we have before us today. But that no vote was simply because we have learned in our Agriculture and Natural Resources Committee that the interest in hunting among Oregonians is in decline, that is, fewer Oregonians wish to hunt. And in that environment, for us to have a no net loss of public lands access just doesn't seem to make sense to me. If there are fewer people who want to do it, then is it important for us to retain the same amount of public land that is available to the hunting public? And because that didn't seem sensible to me, I was a no vote, and will continue to be so on the floor.
Further discussion, Representative Schaffler.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I didn't intend to speak to this. I rarely do this, but I very much encourage everyone to vote for this bill. To the bill, yes, sir.
To the bill.
I grew up in a home that had guns in it in the corner, and they were never loaded, but I had the opportunity to learn how to hunt and fish from a very young age, and it taught me a lot of lessons about life. It taught me exactly what happens when you do shoot, kill, and butcher, and prepare, and eat an animal, and I think that's a good thing. And it's kind of a shame that our children aren't learning those valuable lessons in the state. And I definitely don't want any hunting land, the amount of hunting land being reduced. What I'd like to see is young people going out there, learning the power and how lethal firearms are, but also learning how their food comes to them. We take for granted that we'll have a meat market full of beef and chicken and fish, and also shelves stocked full of toilet paper, and that when we turn on the tap, water will come out of it. And I think the lessons that these children learn out there are invaluable, and it's a shame. I think it's a horrible testimony to the fact to the state of our society that kids don't understand that and aren't being taught these valuable rules and lessons. And I certainly want to maintain the lands that we can hunt and fish on. I strongly urge your vote. Thank you very much.
Representative Gilliam.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Question of the carrier.
Question of the carrier. Does the carrier yield? Carrier, do you yield?
Yes, Mr. Speaker.
He does.
Thank you. The representative from the center of Portland used, as you pointed out, a very interesting story, and it had a very happy ending. And I'm wondering, did Brian have a happy ending?
Brian's not the best shot in the world, so he usually goes hunting at the Roadhouse Grill every evening, but he's doing better.
Thank you. To the bill.
To the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The representative from Lake Oswego has challenged me to find some hard numbers, because in my district, I believe very firmly that interest in hunting is going up. So that's one of the reasons that I'm supporting this bill, and also I wanted to echo the comments from my friend from Happy Valley. This is a good idea for hunters, and I'm supporting it. Thank you.
Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Clem, do you wish to close? He does. He does not. Those are opinion the bill should pass. Vote aye. Those opposed, no. And the quick poll from the voting system. House Bill 3164, having received a constitutional majority, is declared passed. Final reading, memorials and resolutions. Clerk will read the memorial.
HGM 7, urging Congress to pass Employee Free Choice Act.
Question now arises on third reading and adoption of House Joint Memorial 7. Representative Rosenbaum.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move that House Joint Memorial 7 be referred to the House Committee on Elections, Ethics, and Rules.
Representative Rosenbaum moves that House Joint Memorial 7 be referred to the Committee on Elections, Ethics, and Rules. To your motion.
Colleagues, this is a great piece of legislation that just needs a little more work, and we need to send it to committee for that to happen.
Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Rosenbaum, do you wish to close on your motion? She does not. Those who are of the opinion that the motion should be adopted will vote aye. Those opposed, let's do it orally. Those who support the motion will say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The motion, having received the required majority, is declared adopted. House Joint Memorial 7 is referred to the Committee on Elections, Ethics, and Rules. Bills, reports, and other business lying on the table. First reading of Senate bills.
Senate Bill 135 relating to Occupational Therapy Licensing Board. Senate Bill 464 relating to crime. Senate Bill 573 relating to pedestrians. Senate Bill 656 relating to practice of optometry. Senate Bill 835 relating to workers' compensation death benefits.
Bills read first time or passed the Speaker's desk for referral. Second reading of Senate bills.
Senate Bill 451 relating to distilleries.
Bill read second time is passed the third reading. Third reading of Senate bills. Other business of the House. Other business of the Senate. Orders of the day have been completed. Announcements. Representative McPherson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. An announcement for the members of the Judiciary Committee. We ran out of morning time and really all the time available for us to work on our Monday agenda. So I'm asking the committee to convene at 7 a.m. tomorrow morning so that we can get an early start to proceed on the remainder of that agenda and then get over into the agenda we have posted for tomorrow as well.
Further announcements? Remonstrances. Representative Kotek.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, it came to my attention this morning that an issue had been raised with the Chief Clerk's office about the presence of a registered lobbyist on the floor. In last week's Senate Bill 2 and House Bill 2007 debate, just for the record, I would like to offer my apology for an inadvertent violation of House rules. I had no intention of violating House Rule 1701, subsection 6. When I asked my partner Amy to accompany me on the floor, that was a very important day for me and my family, and I had her on the floor as my family member. The fact that that might have been a problem wasn't raised with me until after the fact. I did not give anyone advance warning of it. I do apologize for violating the House rules. I think it's unfortunate that this issue was given advance notice to the media. This was a very personal issue and an internal House matter, and I wish it could have been dealt with differently. I would be happy to talk with any of my colleagues personally one-on-one about the issue, but again, it was an oversight. Chalk it up to freshman exuberance on a very important day for my family. Thank you.
Representative Richardson.
Mr. Speaker, I think we appreciate the fact that an apology was given, but it's important if we look at what's gone on in the session, there have been multiple instances where rules have been violated, and it's important for us as a body to understand that the public does watch and that the rules that we have are important. I mean, first we found that there was exceptions for in-kind contributions. We also found next that there was exceptions for what's proper decorum on the floor of this body, and then lastly an exception for a lobbyist on the floor. But in light of the apology, we understand how that took place. Nevertheless, the integrity is harmed if our House rules are not followed. We must make sure they're not disregarded. The people have a right to know that when we set rules, we're going to follow them, and so let's all be very mindful of that in the future to assure that this body maintains the rules that we've set. Thank you.
The parliamentarian and our clerk would like to make it clear that the issue, she was unaware of the fact that Representative Kotek's family was also a registered lobbyist. This item was not brought to her attention
until after the fact. And so that, I want to put that clarification on the record. Further remonstrances? Adjournment. Representative Jensen, 10 a.m. Tuesday, April 24th, 2007.
Mr. Speaker, I move the House adjourn until 10 a.m. Tuesday, April 24th, 2007.
Representative Jensen moves the House adjourn until 10 a.m. Tuesday, April 24th, 2007. Without objection, the House is adjourned. Thank you.